Welcome back to Sports Interview with Ann Liguori. My guest, longtime friend and colleague in the radio business, Ted Sobel, award-winning radio sports reporter and anchor for 5 decades in the Los Angeles area. He was with KFWB, KNX. He's with Sports USA as studio anchor for the NFL, his 16th year. It can go on and on, Ted, but I'm so happy that you're joining me for the first time on Sports Interview.
Well, Ann, I'm happier that you invited me. Thank you so much. I was looking forward to the chat. We got whatever you want to talk about. We've got so much going on in sports right now during this crazy year. It's hard to believe that we actually got through almost one full year of this. So far.
I can't believe it. But, well, let's start with the Masters, because I usually see Ted Sobel at Augusta National on Radio Row, and hopefully that will be the case this coming April. And I know they just put out an announcement that they will indeed have the Masters. They will have limited patrons, but they are planning to do the drive, chip, and putt national competition and the women's amateur as scheduled, with limited patrons, of course. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I sort of expected it, because pretty much we're not out of the boat as far as where we were just a few months ago when they actually played the last Masters in the wintertime, which was strange to watch. But you know what? I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought they did a great job of covering it as usual. I just think that we still have some months to go until we even feel close to normalcy. And so it's probably a good thing. And look, everybody's minding their P's and Q's here from a health standpoint. It makes a ton of sense. And let's just hope that maybe by early summer, there's a little bit more of, okay, we can start going out, as long as the vaccine is spread out there the way it needs to be. But right now it's still literally one day at a time. And as you know, I'm in Los Angeles and we are having a hell of a bad time here. I mean, the hospitals are full and it's getting scary.
So you're in total lockdown, right? On the West
Coast? No, not total. Not total. No, we still go and pretty much go and as we please, but everybody's just warned to be smart and safe. And I go to the market when I have to. I tend to go late at night anyway. I don't like long lines just to pick up milk and cookies, you know. So it all works out for the best as long as we just play it smart. And I think extra cautious here, and it's turned out for a good reason.
Ted, I know you've covered many a sporting event and have interviewed many a sports legend. And tell me about your time with the great Tommy Lasorda, who managed the Dodgers from 1976 through 1996. And of course, before that, he coached the Dodgers. And before that, he played Kansas City Athletics, Brooklyn Dodgers.
Yeah. Well, look, I've dealt with Tommy ever since he came up from Albuquerque and Spokane as the Dodger minor league manager. And in the early 70s, and this is a chapter in my book, Touching Greatness, coming up. It's about dealing with the greatest draft class in the history of baseball, 1968, when it was Bobby Valentine, Tom Pachoric, Bill Buckner, and on and on and on. They had 16 guys from one draft, although it was split in two in that year. 16 guys made it to the big leagues, which is ridiculous. It'll never even be close to be matched. And I became buddies with several of those guys when I was still a teenager. So I got a feel for what Tommy was all about, whether they liked him, whether they didn't like him. And then he became Walter Alston's third base coach in the early 70s until 1976, when he took over for Alston. Two totally different worlds. But it used to be where, like, guys like Tom Pachoric and Bobby Valentine, they were Tommy's guys. They started with him. They loved him. He was their father figure. And that was a really important issue for these guys, when some other ones weren't so thrilled about Tommy because they didn't think he was real or sincere. And they would rather deal with an old school guy like Walter Alston. So Tommy was the kind of guy, as soon as he took over, it was a whole different era, because it was all of a sudden, wow, this is sort of a Hollywood kind of a guy with a giant personality. And Walter was boring, and he sat and was falling half asleep in the dugout half the time at the latter stages of his years as a manager. So it was a nice change of pace, and it was good to have Tommy's personality there. But he was not always the easiest guy to deal with. As we know, and our mutual friend Paul Olden had the famous with, you know, what's your opinion of Kingman's performance? Well, there was nothing fake about that. That was real. Tommy lost it for about 2 minutes, literally.
And that maybe started Paul's career, right?
At the time, he didn't like it. He was actually thought it was going to be a negative, and I could fully understand that. But people still remember it to this day. And, you know, Paul, we've talked about it the last few days. He's had some calls, been on some radio shows to talk about his access to Tommy. And it never changed. It was never a personal thing. It was just Tommy going crazy for a couple minutes. After that, he was fine.
So Tommy and Paul became not buddies, but he just blew up that one moment. But after that, they had a decent working relationship.
Oh, absolutely. It was never an issue at all. And we joked that on the 50th birthday, with Paul's 50th, I got Tommy to sign a ball and a Dave Kingman picture. And it says, "You want to know what my opinion is? Happy 50th," or something like that.
That's classic.
Yeah.
So well, Tommy was just larger than life. I mean, he was totally one of a kind. And they don't make personalities in sports like this anymore. I mean,
no, you know what? And that makes our job boring. Doesn't it make our job a little more boring that we don't want the cookie cutter answers or the computer responses? We want somebody with a personality who comes out and says, "Hey, this is really who I am, and I want to enjoy it. This is only sports. This is not brain surgery. People should have more fun with it, don't you think?"
Right. I mean, you know, the great storytellers like the Mantles and Ted Williams and all these personalities I got to interview way back when. I mean, you know, you look back to those guys and you just don't get that anymore. And I know people are more cautious because of social media and everything is, you know, everybody's judging everybody else and everybody's under the magnifying glass. But Tommy was, you know, as passionate about baseball and giving back to the fans as, say, Arnold Palmer was to golf and making himself accessible to golf fans. Don't you think? I mean, there was a parallel there as far as personalities go, I think.
I think it's a very good example. And Tommy was one of these guys. He told his players, like Arnie did, told the other players on the tour, "Hey, this is about the public is paying us. If the public doesn't show up, we don't have a job." So Arnold was great about, when you sign your autograph, make it legible and let people know that's yours. And Tommy was very similar. Tommy told his players, "Please sign autographs." He never, ever walked away from somebody who says, "I want to get a picture with you, Tommy." He always took a picture. Bobby Valentine, I saw a video he did. He was very, very close with Tommy. And, you know, Bobby wore number 2 his whole career because that's what Tommy's number was. I don't know if you're aware of that, but they were really, really close. Bobby told me the other day, we had a little texting back and forth. We talked about the passion of the man. He says, "I'm going to miss my father figure, but at the same time, this was a guy that was part of the public. When they used to walk down the street, when Tom would come to New York and Bobby, let's say they might be walking through Manhattan, people didn't know who Bobby was as much as they knew who Tommy was. And he was an LA guy by then. Like, everybody wanted a piece of him. And Tommy never like, "Well, I'm too big for you." He always was like, "No problem. I enjoy it." And that's sort of Arnie like, right?
Absolutely. Arnie would sign autographs 3 hours a day. In fact, I had the opportunity to visit with Arnold Palmer 4 months before he passed in La Trobe. It was after the U.S. Open at Oakmont. And he was not well. But he was signing when I got there. And I heard after I left, he continued to sign. I mean, the guy never stopped. I mean, that's, you don't get that anymore. That's what these you know, former stars and legends, that to me is what made them just so special. You know, they really gave back to the game.
Yeah, I totally agree. And, you know, it's really funny, too, because the guys nowadays, when you see them signing an autograph, when they give it to you, it's like, "I can't even read that." Arnold would slap him across the face if he ever saw that.
That's right. That's right. Well, Tommy Lasorda was the godfather to Thomas Piazza, right? A lot of people thought that it was Mike Piazza.
Mike's brother.
Yeah, it was Mike's younger brother, Lasorda, but Mike Piazza treated him like, you know, he was his godfather as well.
Well, without Tommy Lasorda, I don't know if Mike Piazza would have ever played professional baseball. Not certainly not at a major league level. You know, Tommy's the one who talked the Dodgers into drafting him. I don't even remember it was the 5,000th round, whatever it was. It was way down. I mean, he was not highly recruited at all. He was just another guy who had potential with a big body, and he looked like he could hit the ball a few miles, but Tommy talked the Dodgers into doing it. I'm sure part of it, he was friends with Mike's dad and the whole thing from Pennsylvania. But at the same time, he saw something in him. And Mike credits him all the way, and he should. It would have been, who knows what Mike Piazza, he might have worked at 7-Eleven serving Slurpees. We have no idea.
He always said, Tommy Lasorda, he bled Dodger blue. And he certainly did.
Yep.
Well, rest in peace, Tommy Lasorda. Totally. You are truly going to be missed. Well, you know, last year the world lost another legend from the West Coast, Kobe Bryant, 5-time NBA champion with the Lakers. And, you know, I don't think the sports world gets two bigger stars than Tommy Lasorda and Kobe Bryant, and both on the West Coast. I'm sure you covered many a Lakers game with Kobe playing.
I covered Kobe's entire career, yes.
Yeah, what were your memories of Kobe Bryant?
Well, I used to joke with him that, you know, the 40 plus years that I've been in this business and the several thousand guys I've interviewed, he's cussed me out more than anybody who ever lived.
Really?
Oh, that was Kobe.
Why? What kind of questions would you ask that he would get
they,
so crazy?
They weren't that difficult. Although I do have one interesting story about Kobe that I had no problem. I never had a problem with him cussing me out because I didn't take it personally because Kobe could fall off the handle a few times if he did. He was not the easiest guy in the world to deal with the first several years of his career. He evolved. The last several were great because he totally changed. He grew up, and you know, he was more like a typical only child, although I think he has a sister, but he sort of acted like an only child, like, you know, it's only about me. He was not an easy guy to deal with at all early on.
Really?
Yeah, not at all. But as he got older and he matured, he was fun to deal with. And we joked, I'll never forget the last day, his final game, which was the most amazing game when he scored the 80 points. I mean, it's crazy, right? Or 60 points. It's absolutely crazy. But when you look at him, he was just eating it up. And we talked about how this could never happen in any other stage of his career because everybody used to say, pass the damn ball, Kobe. We want the damn ball. At this game, it was give it to Kobe. Just keep giving him the ball. And he was like, I don't know what to do. It was very funny.
Take the shot, Kobe. Take the shot.
Exactly.
Oh,
no,
my gosh.
You know, I was at the Super Bowl when it happened. The week of the Super Bowl, I was working corporate at the Super Bowl Experience in Miami. And I'm still in shock to this day when I think about it. It's like I couldn't believe it happened. You know, somebody that young, and his daughter was such a nice kid. Mm. Gigi was he was a daddy's girl. You know, she was just a really special kid. And they used to always wait for Kobe outside the Laker locker room. And I'd see the two kids at the time when they were just a couple, and Vanessa. So I got to know them a little bit. And to this day, it's just hard to even fathom that he's
heartbreaking. How many personalities did you decide to have in volume one of Touching Greatness?
Well, the key ones that I made sure were in volume one were Kobe and Shaq, the era that I dealt with them, John Wooden, you know, of UCLA fame, a long chapter on Tiger Woods, covering him from his first tee shot at Riviera when he was 16 to winning the Masters last year. I even said to him, I said, that was very nice of you to close out my chapter. That's not the way I expected it at the end. But, you know, when he won the Masters, it was like, okay, I think that's sort of perfect.
Yes.
You know, to cover him during his entire career and him being an LA guy, that worked out fantastic. And then, you know, I've got a chapter in there on my relationship with Aaron Rodgers of the Packers, getting to know Bart Starr as well, who was my boyhood football idol because I love the Packers. And I got a chance to meet Bart, and I had a good several paragraphs on that. He was just wonderful. You probably had a chance to speak to him somewhere down the road.
Yeah, right? I interviewed Bart Starr. Just a fascinating personality.
Yeah, a wonderful guy. I'm just the nicest.
Such a class act.
Absolutely. And then something I brought up with you a few years ago, and you very well remember being in New York, the Eli Manning story when he beat the perfect Patriots and he killed their season in the Super Bowl. I have a fantastic chapter on dealing with Eli and also David Tyree, who nobody knew anything about before that Super Bowl. And I didn't either. And I covered NFL and I just knew his name. I didn't know it. You know, I think he caught three catches the whole year, by the way, that year. Right. I was at that Super Bowl and I'm at the Giants' last media gathering before the game. This was on a Thursday, I believe. Yeah, I think it was Thursday before the game. And after that, you have no access to the players. And the last guy sitting in the room was David Tyree. It had his plaque on the table. And, you know, it was the receiver's table. They had all left. And he was just sitting there getting ready to leave. And I thought, well, I'll just walk up to him and say, hey, David, I introduced myself, Ted Sobel, Sports USA. We cover you guys. And I just want you to know that there's a proposition bet in Las Vegas on David Tyree, a half a catch. If you catch one, it's an over. And if you don't catch any, it's an under. So what are your thoughts on that? And I had to educate him on what a proposition bet was. And we sat there and talked about this bet. When he was all over, he says, well, you just tell everybody, you make sure they bet the overs because I'm going to make an important catch in this game.
Wow.
And he did. And then I saw him in the locker room afterwards and he walked up to me. I told you I was going to. It's a funny story and it's in the book. And Eli Manning is even just as good of a story, where I'm interviewing him and I get interrupted in the middle of the interview after he wins the MVP award. He's walking through the tunnel. This is in Glendale, Arizona. He's walking through the tunnel with five guys around him, probably league guys, all in suits, right? And then you remember the twin running back who didn't like him that year for the New York Giants? Who was the player that was ripping him on the and social media that didn't like him? The great running back from the previous year.
Who? You remember?
The twins. You know, his brother played for Tampa Bay. And
yeah. The Barbers. Tiki Barber.
Exactly.
Exactly.
So Barber got in the middle with his crew from the Today Show, because that's what he was working for at the time. And he cut off my interview in mid-interview. Cut it off. And you know, it's like you don't get a one-on-one with the MVP of the Super Bowl. I don't care who you are. You got to be on the podium, right? I mean, otherwise, you're not going to get him. Eli walked over to me. He was giving me time, and Barber cut it off. Just cut it off right in the middle. Like, he wanted him, and half-assed apologized to me. So that's like, okay, well, you blew that one. I'm never going to get this again. I walked off into the corner, and when Eli was done with a man, when he was done with him, he looked around like he was looking for his lost puppy and saw me in the corner. He walked through everybody, walked to the corner, put his arms around me, says, let's finish what we were doing.
Oh, he's a class act. Eli Manning, I love, love, love him. He's just such a class guy.
I mean, can you imagine hardly anybody else ever do? I mean, I didn't know him. I'd never met him in my life.
And yeah.
It's a fun story.
Those are great stories, Ted. I can't wait to read the book. Thank you so much. We could go on and on, but this is a good start. Continued success. Can't wait till Touching Greatness comes out in February, Volume 1. And yes. Thanks for being on Sports Interview with Ann LaGore.
I appreciate it, Ann, very much. And it'll be on Amazon as well. So look for it there. And maybe we'll talk when it comes out. It'd be great.
Thanks again.